I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to yet another episode of the Bobo and Fleck Show. My name is Bobo and I am your host and I'm with the beautiful Flex. Flex, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hey. My name is Flex. I am 26. Sometimes I think I'm 25. Sometimes I think I'm 27.
Yeah.
It just depends on how light I feel for the day. I live in Sydney, Australia, and I make podcasts with Bobo and some other stuff. Google us.
Google us.
Oh, and I guess if it's helpful, I'm an Aries sun, Aquarius moon, Pisces rising, Enneagram 3, Wing 4, and
love
an
that.
ENTP.
I'm a Gemini sun, an Aries moon, a Gemini rising, and I forgot everything else, actually. But I have a very fiery Aries chart, and I'm in New York.
You can tell, and this is why I get so mad when people say I'm the fiery one. I'm like, why are they not seeing you for who you are?
Because I'm a scammer. Am I a scammer?
Yeah.
I'm really Joanne the scammer.
Like, yeah. Everyone's like, Bobo's just like so sweet, soft and gentle. She will kill you.
I really will. Like, I do often think about the difference between how people perceive me online versus how people know me IRL. And even like on a granular level, like my boyfriend thinks I'm literally a terrorist, that I'm so harsh and so mean. Meanwhile, like people online think I'm like an angel. I don't know. Then my family thinks I'm the most angelic and sweet person.
Wow.
Yeah, they really, I'm like so virginal and sweet and innocent in their eyes. Like,
I see it.
I know. Meanwhile, we're about to have an episode on shrooms, which we should get into. But yes, I'm just Joanne the scammer. I guess all those parts of me are true. I am both a terrorist and an angel. It just depends on the context. And I'm very inconsistent, very chaotic. But that's only because of all my Gemini placements. So thank you for being here. but yes, we want to talk today about shrooms. When was the last time you did shrooms?
For legal reasons, this is just a story.
Yeah.
I'm so bad with timelines and dates, but maybe 3 months ago, I want to say. Give or take.
How was it?
It was very different to all the other times I'd taken shrooms, which I think is very interesting because I'm so used to being like a high, like a big thinker, like a, what's that? Like when you think so micro and then you go macro, 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 macro.
Yeah.
Like I can see how everything's interconnected and this isn't connected to that and that's the reason. No, not this time. This time was completely different. I had three thoughts.
Yeah.
Just three.
What were your three
thoughts?
We'll get
into it. When was the last time you had shrooms? We'll get into it.
Yeah.
We'll get into it.
The last time I had shrooms, I think it was... Wow. Actually, it's about to be a year. Wow. Yeah. It's about to be my 1 year anniversary.
Is that the time when you're recording the frog? Because that's when I remember.
Oh, no. Was I on shrooms then? I actually wasn't on shrooms. So another thing is that I think I'm already just always high on some level. Like I feel, I feel kind of out of it all the time. But that's, I'll get into
sweetie.
That. I know that that's healthy. But But yes, the last time I was properly on shrooms, that was... Hold on, there's something in my eye. Give me a second. Oh, this is so annoying. You know when your eyelash goes into your eye?
Absolutely.
Of course this would happen as we talk about shrooms. So yes, that was about a year ago. I literally think it was 2019 on this day, December 4th, that we're recording. So wow, look at the universe. And for me, the experience, oh yes, for legal reasons, I didn't do this. This is a story. This is just a storytelling podcast. Like none of this that happened actually happened. Okay. Yes. So for me, it was... It felt like being in conversation, not with God, but like with the planet itself, but not like a verbal conversation. I felt a lot of things. I spent most of the time crying. The first few hours, because I think it took like 6 or 7 hours for it to wear off. I'd say the first 3 hours were absolutely terrible. I felt like I could feel all of the pain of everyone on this entire planet. Like, I felt like I could feel everyone suffering right there and then. I don't know. I felt like I was grieving something. And I feel like the entire, like, those 6 to 7 hours or whatever it was, it just felt like I was, like, in a conversation with the planet, which felt very feminine, very like motherly, very parental and nerd. Like it felt like this, like planet Earth is like a black, like she's a black mother, like she's a black mom taking care of her kids. But it felt like a very like sad conversation, and it felt like a parting of ways where it was like, yeah, no, like I've done for y'all all that I could. But we have to part ways now because you guys are toxic. But I still love you. But yeah, we have to let go now. I also feel like I had a lot of clarity. So I was one of those kids that was born by mistake. Like I wasn't born with intention. Mm-hmm. And which is very on brand for me. I actually, like my mom didn't know she was pregnant with me until she was 4 months pregnant. And she just went to the doctor for like something so regular. And the doctor was like, you know, you have a whole human inside of you.
Ooh.
She was like, there's no way. I've had no symptoms, like nothing. And he was like, no, fam, like here it is. So I always wondered if like the lack of intention through which I was born directly translates to the feeling I've always had of like being here by mistake. Like I wonder if like I got off at the wrong bus stop. And I got some clarity on those feelings, and like I still don't think I'm here for like some divine purpose, but I feel like there was purpose for humanity. Like there's a purpose for humans as a whole. So yeah, it felt very enlightening and very like quite like profound, but also not profound all at the same time. And like kind of healing, but also like incredibly, like I've never cried that much in my life.
That's a lot, sis.
I know. I love what how is... that's like, I love how you were just like on shrooms, like I'm not thinking about anything.
Yeah, literally. I remember
and over here like communing. Yeah,
I'm like, I don't know. I think for this year, I've been trying to like shrooms aside, I've been trying to exercise like critical, practical thought, not so high level that I spiral at all the possibilities, because that's my preference. Mm. I'm like possibilities, possible concepts, ideas, imagination. But it takes me so far out of my reality that it's hard to find the point of any of it all. And then I'm left with these feelings of restlessness, fear of the unknown, confusion. That's not fun. So I try to approach a lot of what I do with practicality. Like, what is the reason for this? Why are you doing this? If you don't know, do something different that makes more sense, that is more aligned to you. So because I remember... when I was in Ghana doing a variety of things that cannot be named, because who knows, like I don't want to get, who knows, no articles please. But I remember my friends and I were sitting in this like beautiful rainforest And we're just having this conversation. It was so odd. Like, we were just talking about life, and then we were talking about the Libra, which is Facebook's cryptocurrency. They're calling it something else now. But anyway, we're talking about the Libra. And then we're talking about Facebook, the interconnectivity of Facebook, this idea of like truth and one's reality. And it got so big and so macro. And like, when you are in those conversations and you feel like you're an active part of those conversations, it all feels so purpose driven. Like, I'm sharing my ideas because they make sense, and you share your ideas because they make sense. And I remember back down the drive back home, which was down a huge like hill essentially. So from the rainforest, you can kind of see like a bird's eye vantage point of the whole city. So driving down the hill and then getting further away from trees and like further into smog and smoke and people and cars, it was all so sobering. And the conversation prior had felt so useless, because at that moment we felt like we were changing the world. We're like, this is, we get it. Like, the reason why they're doing this is because of this. And then this is why. And then like, you just feel so high on these ideas of why things are the way they are, only to come back into the real world and be like, well, this is what's actually happening, babe.
Yeah. Like what now?
What do you do with that information? And it all just felt completely sobering. So I'm not doing that again. So the most recent time, I was like, you know what? I'm just here to vibe. Like, whatever comes, comes, whatever doesn't come, come. Yeah. So I was sitting there, my friend and I were sitting by a fire, and we were in front of that fire for like 13 hours. We weren't even high for half of that time, we were sober, eating Beyond Meat burgers and grilled cheeses.
I love this.
And listening to music and looking at trees and be like, wow, trees are so pretty. We love trees. Ah, I love trees. Ah, no reception. Really beautiful stuff. And then, so when I had the shrooms, I had three thoughts. And the first thought was about the fire. And I had never tended to a fire myself before. And so I guess I'd never been privy to like the life cycle of a fire and how much fire would you need to keep a fire burning. And so it was weird to be in this like state of no thoughts, just staring deep into flame for 3, 4, 5 hours, but then watching that flame dissipate. And then just by, not even by thought, but by physical reaction, just like getting up, getting firewood, putting it back in, adjusting the fire, adding some more, letting the fire burn, watching it. So that was the one thought, like fire burns, fire out, refill fire, fire burns. So it's like this whole cyclical nature of things. And then I was thinking about the moon, and I was like, isn't that so wild? The moon is up there. And like, it just does its own thing, and it's fully keeping us illuminated right now. And I would never have considered that it was doing that for me up until this point. The moon is not in my frame of mind. And I was like, wow, I should be more considerate of what the moon's doing for me. Shout out to the moon.
But shout then, out to the moon.
Not in that many thoughts though. It was like fire, fire hot, fire burning, fire out, fire wood, moon great, moonshine light. Moonshine light on us. Moon so nice. and then because of where we were in this tiny house that was surrounded by trees. So we were in like this tiny clearing in the middle of a forest, I guess. And so surrounded by trees. And because during the day, nothing is scary in the daytime, right? Because you can see everything. But I am scared of the dark. I've always been afraid of the dark. And the older I get, probably the more afraid I get because of just the unknown and because I've seen how wild the world is, you know, like before I think I had very little to inform what my fear of the dark was, but now I'm constantly afraid of the dark, but I just conquer it. I just walk through my house. I'm like, if someone's going to get me, then like, whatever, it's my time. I got to go.
Yeah, it is what it is.
It is what it is. So sitting in that clearing and looking at those trees in the day and being like, so pretty, so comforting, so whatever. And then the moment the sun sets and I'm like, why am I so scared? Like nothing has changed from the morning to the night.
Right.
And I was like, what is fear? Why scared of dark? What is in the dark? Why not die?
Nothing.
Maybe not die. Yeah. Don't die. Tree's scary. Tree's not scary. Tree's oxygen.
Wow.
So just a loop of thoughts. And it was so interesting because I felt like I had permission not to do a lot of thinking because I was sitting with someone who didn't require like my entertainment. Like, my friend wasn't like, and let's talk about this and let's do this. We were just having our own very separate experiences next to each other. And there was this like really beautiful, not even symbiosis, but this beautiful harmony of like, if I didn't get the firewood, she would get the firewood, but there was no communication. It was like, oh, and then I'll move the wood and then you'll put in the whatever, the fire starter. It was incredible. But then it got bad. So when it was bedtime, it was so odd. So when it was bedtime, because it was by that point, it was so cold because it was winter and we were running out of firewood. And so we're like, we'll just go to bed. I'm very obviously wired, but that's okay. So we went into the tiny house and my friend had fallen asleep so quickly. And I was like, oh, okay. I didn't know we were sleeping. But it didn't really matter. We weren't talking anyway at that point. So I was sitting in this tiny house and then as if all at once, every thought I've ever had just rushed over me. I could not think. And these thoughts were not coherent. I would look at something that I knew what it was, like a cup, right? And I'd be like, cup, umbrella, purple, umbrella, silver, purple, cup. What?
What? Wait, and I'd be like, why is this happening?
Bathroom, toilet, umbrella, Spain, Europe, colonialism, Australia. Huh?
What?
And like every time I would try and catch the train of thought, it would spiral so quickly out of my comprehension that I couldn't comprehend what I was trying to comprehend. I was like, oh no, sweetie. Oh no, yeah. No. This isn't it. And it was so interesting to feel like I could only like attribute it to the fact that when my friend was awake, I had like permission not to speak, think, because if she was comfortable with us not speaking, then it was fine. But it was like, when she was asleep, I'm like, well, can I just sit here and not think? And it was like, it's the most like disorienting feeling, not being able to stop your thoughts from thinking.
Yeah.
Because at this point, they weren't even my thoughts. It's like I just had access to a lot of thoughts. Oh, it's almost like a conversation that I couldn't escape. I was like, yes. All right, I'm done. Thank you. And it was like, no. Yeah. Done where? Done how? Done who? Words, paragraph, syntax, grammar. It was most bizarre thing. And I was like, I can totally understand how, because I'm in my day-to-day life, like sans shroomed, I don't find it very difficult to quiet in my mind, and that's why I can enjoy meditating now, because it's I didn't realize that that's what it was until I had practiced. Yeah. And it was like, okay, it's nice to just take a break and like focus on anything, just my breathing. That's really nice. So in this moment I was like, I'm not interested in having all of these thoughts, thank you. Like, they're not for me. I really am not interested in all these theories and concepts, these words. I don't care, remove them from my brain. I'd like three thoughts again. And I thought that was like a nice parallel, and it really put some context around like my approach to critical thinking now. Like, I don't need the high level thought unless they can be used in practical settings. I'm not interested in high level theory.
Yeah.
I don't want academia. I want a greater vocabulary to understand and explore the world that's happening like right now, not the world that could be or should be or has been just right now.
Yeah.
And it's been helpful in really like targeting what I do and don't care about and what I have the capacity to care about. It's really incredible. But yeah, that feeling.
Wow.
And like my extremities, like I couldn't, it was like, let's say I would move my fingers, right? Just to like, you know, it felt nice, but then my fingers would move without me. Like, it would start its own rhythm. And I'm like, if I can't control my thoughts or my body, then what is the point? And then I was having this thought about control. Like, what is it to actually be in control? Maybe I've never had control and I was really good at masking. Yeah. Jesus. And then I was like, you know what? No more. I don't need substances for a long time. I'm fine with the thoughts I have.
Interesting. Do you think you enjoy being sober more than you enjoy? Wow.
Absolutely. I like trying recreational substances for context. I'm like, oh, this is what it feels like. But I'm not someone, like, I don't have an addictive personality. And
me too.
I just feel like I have a lot of facets of my personality that I can pull out when necessary.
Yeah.
And like, I like recreational drugs because they're fun, but they're also very limiting. Like, you are limited to a very small range of like either thoughts or feelings or experiences, depending on what you're taking. And that to me, right. I'm like, I want the range. Like, can I just not feel multiple things at once? Why must I feel so hyper energetic or super sad or existential? Just that single feeling though. Why can't I feel all of those things? But yeah, substances, that's why I also don't drink. I'm like, I don't get the point. Like, my range so limited. Why would I, like, alcohol, I don't get it. I really don't understand it. I don't understand weed either.
Yeah, like,
it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of weed. It's not for me. I don't think I've tried it and I hated it. So it's not for me. But I do remember you saying that you would sooner do drugs than do alcohol, which I thought was hilarious, but also fascinating. Can you elaborate?
Drink alcohol? Never.
The ghetto. The absolute ghetto. Alcohol is ghetto, by the way. Like, I actually can't believe as a species, we've just decided we're going to drink ethanol. Like, we're just going to poison ourselves because our reality is that bad. Like, it's so, like, reality is that bad that we have to poison ourselves with ethanol to escape momentarily. To wake up the next day feeling worse terrible. Than we felt before. Like...
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I guess I didn't really grow up in an environment where alcohol was prevalent, so I didn't have a lot of context for that. I feel like as I explore my childhood, I don't think I was sheltered on purpose, but I just didn't have a wide range of, like, even passive experiences. So I didn't know what it was like for people to be drunk in the real world. Like, obviously you see movies and stuff, but that's not really, that's not really reflective of what it's like. And so I remember, because my parents are divorced, and I used to, every Sunday from like the age of like 12, maybe like 10 to 13, I would go to my dad's house on a Sunday. Real like obligation shit. I have to go to my dad's house. It was like 15 minutes. He'd be drinking and smoking. He'd be like, how are you? Good. Do you want some money? Sure. All right, be good. Okay. And then I'd leave. That was the extent.
Yeah.
So I'd always associated the smell of alcohol and cigarettes with my dad. So I was like, oh, that's like paternal and it's masculine. But like, he was such a stoic person. So I'm like, that's what it's like to drink. You just become stoic. So yeah, not having that context and then like binge drinking in the park, not even binge drinking. Cause like, I probably wasn't even drunk for the first time until I was like 19. But, or like 18 actually, but being around alcohol and being like, how do you all know how to drink? And like, why are we all drinking this thing that tastes terrible? Like, not one of these things tastes good. And we're all doing literally. This. You just got to drink it and then you'll get used to it. And I was like, I don't get it. It's not for me.
But like, so why would you get used to something that's not good? I'm like, this sounds, that was my logic too.
The same as coffee for me. I'm like, it doesn't taste good. So I'm not interested in drinking this.
I hate coffee. Oh my God. I would rather deep throat a cactus than to drink coffee.
And I get it's cultural as well. But I don't get it. I liken it to certain things like, maybe if you have had tripe before, you can understand why somebody else wouldn't want to eat tripe or snail or okra. Yeah. But you can understand because culturally you've had it. Maybe it's like that. So then there was like a short stint when I was 18 that I would go out and drink with everyone. But I was like, this is so hard. I haven't learned how to drink, so I can't keep up with everyone. I don't like the taste, so it's taking me longer to drink. I can't keep up. I'm not having a good time. I feel nauseated. I'm feeling dizzy. It's too hard. And there was this one time on my 19th birthday where we had gone to this bar where you could get like $3 vodka stuff, vodka cranberry, vodka soda. It's called Bar Century. And it was like the place where people would go to get drunk for really, really cheap in Sydney.
Yeah.
And so we're like, we're going to get fucked. So we drank all of this. It was just like blah blah blah, and by the time it had been like 2 hours, my friend and I had like 16 shots between us, I mean each, but because I didn't drink and she was like good at drinking and like vomiting and like getting herself composed, she was like, you just gotta vomit. I was like, okay. So I end up going to the bathroom and bitch, I'm comatose. I'm on that floor. I can't get up. I can't move my head. I can't think. I'm like, this is not good. And then I had, it was just too much. Like, I didn't have any context for how I was supposed to feel. So the moments where I could have stopped or been like, oh, no, I'm feeling very nauseated or I'm actually drunk. I was like, I don't know what drunk is. I'm just drinking things. And then I remember I got in a taxi home and then I wasn't wearing my seatbelt. So I got fined by the police. And then I projectile vomited outside my house. And I was like, nah, I'm not doing this alcohol thing. I don't get it.
Never. Yeah.
Why was my stomach hurting? My head hurts. I'm nauseated. My head hurts the next day. I feel sick. I can't walk. I'm wobbling. I can't hold a thought. I can't shrink. What is... No, not for me. So
what is the point?
What is the point? So that was a quick one for me. And then the illicit substances. It's just context for trying. There are tons I like, tons I dislike, but ultimately I far prefer to be sober. It's just easier for me.
Yeah.
I like to be able to regulate and consciously choose or not choose to do things. And I feel like sometimes, like, I think a lot of people who take recreational substances like to think that they have full control over that experience and that whatever's happening to you is of your own volition. But realistically, it's a lot about surrender. Like, your body is taking you places and you just have to trust that you'll get back to normal. But a lot of the time you're like, oh, this could be it. Like, how many times have I been cross-eyed being like, oh, no, 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 no. This can't be it. I can't be cross-eyed? No!
At my big age?
I'm not into it. And I also think that, like, there's a certain... Because I didn't grow up around, like, experimenting in that way, I can easily dip in and dip out and be like, oh, it's not for me. Like, I'm not interested in drinking. I don't want alcohol. Like, you're all alcoholics. Like, I see the culture. But I know a lot of my friends who have experimented far sooner feel they struggle to detach from these things and take it really personally. Like, no one can make me feel embarrassed or uncomfortable about not drinking or having taken drugs because I can actively choose not to. Like, I'm not interested in taking a drug again. Like, I'm quite comfortable not to.
No, like... I was literally about to say this. Like, no one can actually convince me to do anything that I don't want. Like,
literally.
I am... Peer pressure has never worked on me. There was never an age where I was ever peer pressured into doing anything. Like, I feel like I've always had a really, like, solid sense of what I want and what I don't want. And I've just known... Like, cigarettes from the get-go, I was like, that's not for me. It'll never be for me. That's a no.
Oh, yeah, I don't get sickies. Like, but I also don't care fundamentally. I think culturally, I think, and especially in Australian culture, alcohol is prevalent and it looks fun. I love the idea of like an after work drinky, you know, like a little mimosa. Like, it looks fun. A little champagne. Yeah. But it's not for me. Even smoking, I'm like, I don't really care that people smoke. I don't mind. Like,
me neither. Yeah.
People are using the argument of like, but you're killing yourself. I'm like, baby, I eat preservatives every day. It's Madonna also- every day. Like, I'm also dying. I'm embalming from the inside. I don't care.
No, that's also, I genuinely feel that, like, I was asking my friend yesterday, do you think being sober all the time is unhealthy? Like, is it healthy to always be sober? Because, like, when I really think about it, people's like realities, honestly, like, why are you torturing yourself? When I really think about it, people's realities are so dire that, like, fam, just do drugs. Like, actually, just do drugs then. And, like, I just think it's just, like, I will never judge a bitch for doing drugs because, like, life is suffering. Like, I feel you. And I just think, like, you're going to die anyway. You might as well, like, if you're already suffering, then I guess you're doing yourself a favor by shortening your lifespan. And, like, all of capitalism is also killing you. Like, we are an accomplice to our own murder. I feel like there's, like, a moral value placed on people who do drugs. Like, it's seen as, like, oh, you're less than, you're inferior, this and this and that. But really, I'm just, like, do what you gotta do to cope with the terrors of existence. Like, I can't judge a bitch. I cannot judge a single bitch.
It's no judgment. What I do judge is... I don't like drug slander. I don't like slander for a lot of things, actually, if you've had no context. So people, for instance...
What do you mean by drug slander?
So let's say in this instance, people kind of like...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I did a poll on my story the other day because on my other podcast, Flex's Semi-Factual History Lessons, I was talking to Tilly Lawless, and the episode was about drugs, and we were talking about decriminalization, legalization, the impacts of that, what we did and didn't learn about drugs. Is the fear-mongering beneficial by legalizing? Are we inherently encouraging people to take drugs and all these conversations. And I wanted to get an idea of what my audience felt about drugs. And I said, you know, what are your, what's your impression of someone who takes drugs? And it was like drop kick, homeless person, dumb, unintelligent, dangerous, lives life on the edge, untrustworthy. And I was like, okay, whoa, this is a lot. I don't like, and this sounds, I don't have time to find the right way to word this. So like, just give me the benefit of the doubt that I'm not trying to be offensive. But when people have really strong views about things they have not experienced and they could quell these views or be more indifferent if they had tried it. So like, for instance, atheists who like, cannot fathom why somebody would want religion in their lives.
Do not
sounds
get me started.
Naive to me. You have to. Surely you can see. It's childish.
It's also just the height of privilege. Like people like Sam Harris just make me mad because it's like, of course you're an atheist. Like you are a white man. You don't need religion because this planet is your heaven. Like. You cannot fathom that most people need religion as a survival tool, as a coping mechanism. Of course you can't fathom because this reality for you is heaven. Like,
and so similarly, I was like, in this instance, it's really like at our big ages, because I know my audience is majority like 18 to 30. So at our big ages, we've had enough time to understand that not everybody who takes a recreational substance is a homeless person who lost their house and their family gambling. Wake up. It's your mums and their Lululemon, okay? It's your teacher. Literally. It's your doctors. They're coked up. It's your GP. It's like, come, hello, wake up. So that frustrated me because I don't care to defend people who take recreational drugs regularly, every week, more than once a week. I don't care. Do what you want. But the people who have no visibility, no experience being like, and this is why, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, it's not that deep, babes. It's not that deep.
Like, stop. Yeah. It's relax. Also so rooted in stereotypes and like, it's so gendered, it's so racialized. I remember when I was an accountant, the first thing...
An actual accountant, everyone, not OnlyFans, an actual accountant.
I was a whole accountant at one of the big four firms, and I was so shook at the cocaine culture. Like, you guys are just out here doing just casually doing coke. Like, and the irony is that, like, it's people in those positions... who do the most drugs, but we're made to feel that it's always like people who are poor or people who are black or people, you know, who in the underbellies of society. No, like it's also the irony of the fact that drugs were funneled into black neighborhoods by the government, at least in America. But black people are made to feel as if like it's our fault and we're the ones who are pushing drugs and doing the most. Like, no.
It's not the case. Not it's the just case. Funny. It reminds me though, and I guess we should talk about it now. I'm not someone who does New Year's resolutions, but what's really helped me is themes for the year. And I was thinking about this only because I was like, okay, why? What is somebody who has such strong, not uninformed opinions, but opinions that are cultivated and rooted in like biases, stereotypes, whatever, and they're not even willing to step out of that reality to consider one outside of their own. I'm like, oh my gosh, I know what it is. It's a lack of tolerance. And like next year, because my theme this year was trying to be more considered, trying to be more articulate, and trying to have more empathy. Next year, my theme is tolerance and compassion. Because intolerance will kill you before it kills the person you're intolerant of. Don't, sweetie, take the tension out of your shoulders, you know?
Yeah.
All this energy you spend fixing your fingers to now go and yell at someone for not doing life the way you want to do life. Tired.
Can you imagine?
Boring. Over it. Not interested.
It's
me
so
seeing another
too.
Girl, another non-black person in braids, I don't care. Live.
No, literally. I've been not.
You
want
to say the N-word? Ah, it is what it is. You know, enjoy.
Like, yeah. No, truly, I don't have time. That is where I am.
They said trauma lives in the body, and it is a fact. It is a fact, and I will not hold any more trauma in my body for fun. Especially
or anger.
Not for no reason. Exactly. It is just so gross to feel your body, like, shake with anger. I can't, enragement, I can't feel it anymore. I'm not interested.
No. Mm-mm. I'm not someone that, I feel like I regulate my emotions very well, but the emotion I have the most trouble with is anger. Like, I'm very good at being calm and measured when it comes to disappointment or when it comes to despair. You know, any emotion outside of anger, I'm quite good at regulating. But anger, like, really, I can't tolerate anger from other people. And I can barely tolerate, like, I cannot deal with anger inside of my body. Like, we're not doing that. Mm-hmm. For that reason, I don't argue with people for free. Yeah. I'm not doing debates in the DMs. Like, it truly has, wow, done so much for my mental health.
Do you know what
I just see
is?
The way it's... people debate for free on Twitter.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, oh.
It can't happen.
No.
Do you know what it is?
It cannot.
It's realizing that everything matters, but more than you realize. Like, the reason why I feel like we had time to debate in the DMs prior was because it mattered. The topics we were talking about mattered. It was important to get the information across. But what matters more than convincing a stranger of our truth or whatever it might be is like mental health. It's not,
no,
it's
truly
not, like that matters far more.
Yeah.
It's sense of self. It's like creating boundaries. All that matters so much more than this very inconsequential experience. Because I guarantee of all the debates I've had in my DMs, I've probably changed the minds of like 10% of the people. Those ratios are not high enough for me to go on. I'm sorry.
No.
I've quit.
No, honestly.
I'm a quitter.
Honestly. And you wonder, like, what did you get from that? Even if you did change someone's mind, what did you gain?
Yeah.
Like, truly, like, what, how did you benefit from that interaction? No, we need to, it's something I try to do often is, like, really analyze whether the things I do benefit me. Mm-hmm. Because it's incredible how humans... And I talk about the concept of bad faith a lot because it's actually so important and so permeating. It's incredible how much humans do things that don't benefit us all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, all the time.
Bad faith is a real one. And I'm trying not to walk through the world with bad faith because it's so easy for me to default to that. And it is so easy to assume that the person that you're dealing with is moving through the world with suspicious, malevolent intentions because so much of our lives affirm that belief. It's not an irrational thought to have, but also it's a very damaging thought to have because it warps your sense of self and everything you see. Suddenly, I mean, look, I'm not about toxic positivity, but bad faith will kill you.
No, it truly, it does kill people. Like, and I feel especially because women are more prone to living in bad faith than men. Because men are socialized to just self-actualize themselves regardless of how it affects others around them. Whereas women are socialized to shrink themselves at all costs. Mm. Women are really dying out here, dating people they shouldn't be with because of bad faith. Staying in jobs they could leave because of bad faith. Like, it's everyday bad faith. Why? No.
Everyday bad faith. Look, I love the learning. Realizing things. Thank goodness Kylie Jenner said it in 2018, because ever since then.
I know.
She was the catalyst. We've
been realizing things.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, on the topic of drugs, do you think that you would be as tolerant towards drugs if it was your child doing drugs? Like if your child is like, Mom, I'm doing cocaine. Because that's what I want to do. Life is suffering and I want to be high to be able to cope with it. And I don't care if it kills me because, bitch, I want to die anyway. Like, don't judge me. I just want to be a cokehead. Like,
yeah, I mean, imparting tolerance doesn't mean I don't care. It's just like removing my shit out of the situation. Like, yeah. In the instance of it being your child, though, it's a different impact. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Tolerance, yes. Compassion, surrender. Like, what are you supposed to do? Especially if someone's coming to you with a decision made and not a topic up for discussion. You want to be an addict? Welcome. Like,
what kind of black parent are you?
What are you meant to do? Baby, I've been colonized. I've been whitewashed.
Yeah.
It's just like, we've discussed this before. I care about a lot. I care a lot about a little. And for me, a good exercise is really like compartmentalizing. And also, like, I feel as though, I mean, am I going to have kids? Who knows? But if my kid is at the age where they're now consciously able to not only take drugs, but not decide to be an addict, then is my work here done? Did I not do it right? What happened? We were being tolerant and now you're an addict. What happened? I wouldn't know what to do. Child rearing just seems very difficult.
Bruh. No, I would do the exact same thing because the way I see it, like, I'm trying to, I think in order to be a good and loving parent, you have to divest from the idea that your child is your possession or that your child is even yours in any way. So, like, at the point where you're an adult and you're my child and you've decided to be an addict, what can I do? You just can't be an addict in my house, but what can I do, fam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Having no control is just, like, my worst fear. But then, like, my whole life affirms that I just have control over nothing. So sad.
Yeah.
Like, we just need to play back the episode we did on free will and predeterminism and just, like, redact everything I said. Nothing is my choice, really. I mean, it's my choice, but do I have control? Probably not.
Yeah, no. I find that very freeing, though. But I also, I think there are people who feel that they're in control of their lives. I've actually never felt that way, but it doesn't bother me. Mm. I literally do feel like I'm just a puppet. Okay, no, I feel like I'm on a roller coaster and I'm just not steering this wheel. So I also think that's also why I constantly feel high. Like, I, when you were describing your experience with shrooms, where like there's just thoughts, just a constant bombardment of thoughts, that's just me every day, which is really unhealthy. Wow. Yeah, but that's actually just my brain. There's literally a trillion thoughts happening at once. I remember when I was still in school, I went to go see a counselor or a school psychologist or whatever. And they're like, oh, you have ADHD. And I was like, I don't know that that's it. Like, I don't know that that's it. Part of the reason why weed doesn't do it for me is because, like, what is this doing for me, really? Like, I don't feel that much different. I don't know. Like, I just feel like me, but slowed down, which I don't like. Yeah.
I wish I understood. I mean, I don't wish I understood what that felt like, but I wish I could comprehend what you were explaining better.
Yeah. How is it like to just feel like, to just be able to control your thought, like to just be like, no, I'm going to stop thinking now.
I don't know, actually. Well, I think, I don't know. Some things like overcome me and I can't stop thinking about them. And that's often like conflict. I find it really difficult to like remove that from my brain. It's like that overrides every function in my body. Like if I'm in a situation where I'm having unresolved conflict, I stop eating, I stop like creating, I can't like focus on what I'm doing. It's very scary. But on an average day to day, I think it's because when I'm thinking, I'm often thinking like in full thoughts. So I'm thinking out things. I'm not just like, things aren't popping in my brain. Like I'm not just like, oh, that's a bag and that's another bag. I'm like, oh, I should organize those bags. And that bag has been there for a long time. And should I sell that bag?
Wait, I'm not sure. Spiraling.
And then now in my adulthood do I start talking to myself. Because I didn't before. And I used to regard talking to myself as very weird. But sometimes I'm like, sometimes I talk to my inner monologue like it's not me.
I'm actually spiraling. And then I suss is inside your mind, is it a monologue or is it a dialogue? You like having a conversation? Okay. Are you having a conversation with yourself or with another part of yourself? Who are you talking to in your
it's
mind?
It's either or depending, right?
Mm.
Because like, you know how some thoughts you have, you're like, those aren't my thoughts. I wouldn't think that. Where's that coming from? You don't get that?
No, I've never... I'm literally spiraling so hard. I've never experienced that.
Like, I reason with myself constantly. Like, there's... I feel like there are distinct parts of myself. And sometimes I chalk it down to what I want to do and what I have to do. And those are the two parts of my brain. Or, like, the conscious Lil who's, like... Who is, like, maybe being irrational and the subconscious, which is a little bit more rational. And then I'm just, like, having that dialogue. So I'm often talking to myself in my head or externally.
Yeah. No, I relate to that, too. I feel like the inside of my mind, it feels like there's, like, five niggas. And we're always, not that we're always debating, but we're always, like, negotiating. Like, I have to negotiate with everyone. Because there's like the person who wants to go to sleep right now. There's the person who wants to watch another episode of Love. There's the person who can't stop thinking about what that bitch yesterday on the train said to me. Like, it's just like my brain feels like 10 people talking sometimes all at once, but sometimes they're just like negotiating or like they're in dialogue, they're in conversation. They're,
Do you ever just like space out?
I think I'm always spaced out.
Huh.
I think that's like my constant state of being. Well, I think that is why I find it so hard to be like grounded in here. Because I'm like entertaining these niggas. I'm going to sound like I'm wild. Like, but it's actually not wild. It's actually like I don't feel like sick or anything. But I feel like it's hard for me to feel grounded in reality because I'm always like entertaining whatever's going, like the events of the in my mind today. Like it takes a lot more effort for me to be here than for me to like be just drifting away. But I also appreciate it because I'm never bored. Like people will be like, oh, I'm bored. And I'm like, I've never experienced that emotion. Like I genuinely don't experience boredom because... I can just be with
you
my
and all
mind.
Your friends in your head. I definitely only have one other friend in my head.
Yeah,
wow, that is like, so interesting.
Yeah, like how are you bored when you have thoughts?
Yeah, like what role does your mind or minds play for you? Because my mind is like just a negotiator, like a confidant, or like a sounding board.
Yeah, but it doesn't entertain you. Like, do you feel entertained?
When I was younger, yeah, but I feel like I've just gotten a little bit more grounded and practical in my adulthood.
Yeah.
So, like, I used to be, I used to daydream a lot when I was younger. I used to, like, try and, like, pre-script my dreams. So, before I would go to bed, after I'd finished reading, I would now try and find a way to, like, create a new storyline in my head that integrates me into the narrative I've just read in my books in hopes that my dreams would, like, play out in that way. Too much time.
Yeah.
But that was like a very like active thing I used to do. And I would constantly try and find time to be alone so I could like escape to this fantasy land and like continue that narrative in my head. It's like, yesterday, this is what we thought about this thing. Today, this is where the story is going. But like, yeah, not in adulthood. Now I'm just like, yeah, sounding board, negotiating, asking questions and like checking in. But I don't know if when I'm checking in, like when I'm asking myself questions, I don't know if the myself in my head is the real me and the self I externalize is the one who's fighting against the real me, or the other way around. Like the one in my head is the repressed me. That's not the real me. That's fighting through to like change the actions.
Yeah.
Or they're like, you know, two halves the same whole. But like, that's why intuition's a tricky one for me. Cause I'm like, is this just like confirmation bias of me just being like, yeah, no, you should do that because you want to do that. It's intuitive.
Or yeah, like, no,
I'm actually like tapped in.
I think for me, the way I've conceptualized intuition is like, it's like a democratic vote of all the panel of people, like of all the panel of like opinions in my mind, how many of you guys agree with this decision? Like, which I know isn't all objectively in intuition. Yeah, like, I know that's not objectively intuition, but that's how I navigate it, because I can't tell, like, is this feeling that I'm having in my body just confirmation bias, or is that genuine intuition? Yeah, it's just really hard to tell.
Maybe we'll never know.
I know.
That's the fun. That's the gag.
Right? Do you think in thoughts or words or like,
I think in sentences.
Mm.
Like I hear my own voice and it's almost like as fragmented as, like right now, I feel like I'm expressing before I've thought. It's just like, it all comes out.
Yeah.
So you know how there's like a distinct difference between us having a conversation and then me explaining myself. And one requires me to actually like interrogate what I think. And this is just me expressing what I know. What I'm doing now just feels like vomit. Like it's just like externalizing. It's coming out of me. But if I'm thinking in my head, it moves like a conversation, like me cutting myself off and then my mind cutting my real self off, and then my real self's cutting my mind off. I don't know. I like it in there though. Like I'm not, I think about like a lot of my friends who are quite anxious people and don't have like the bandwidth to trust their mind. And I feel like that would be really tricky.
Ooh.
Or like people I know who are like quite depressed. Because
the bandwidth to trust their mind.
Because if you, like, let's say if I have, like, the friends of mine who have, like, severe depression and may struggle with, like, suicidal thoughts, but feel as though, like, it's not me. I know it's just my mind. It's like, your mind is, like, it's like, it's trying to drown you out, you know? That would be such a frustrating feeling to be like, no, like, I want to feel differently and my mind won't let me go. Like, it won't let me just live how I want to live. It's pulling me into a thought spiral. It's pulling me into a negative thought space. It's pulling me away from where I know I prefer to be. And I feel like myself and my mind are just like, you want to chat? Yeah, cool. What you want to chat about?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm going to come back to you in a second. All right, cool.
Yeah, like there's no coercion. They're not
they're like, what do you want to talk about? I don't know, what you want to talk about? Okay, cool. Let's talk.
No, that's so fascinating. I think I actually don't experience depression in that way. I don't experience it as like a tug and pull. I like don't have cognitive dissonance. Like even when I'm suicidal, I don't have cognitive dissonance about it. Yeah, I don't feel like my mind is trying to convince me. I feel like, yeah, I've decided this is what I want to do, but these are the reasons why I'm not going to do it. Like, for me, it's not like a struggle. It's more just like a feeling that I've accepted, but like I've also intellectualized enough to know what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. But that's really interesting.
I always like when we're having these conversations, I'm like, how do we facilitate everybody telling us what they feel in this moment? I want the thoughts of 10 other people right now.
Literally. So if you're listening to this, please tell us how your mind works. Like we need to know. Do you think in thoughts? Do you think in words and pictures, in textures? How many people are in your mind? Do you get bored? People who get bored, I really want to know, why do you get bored when you have thoughts? Like, why doesn't your mind entertain you?
Is there like philosophical reasoning for like your approach to how you view your mind dictates how you see the world? Like that one guy said, like, I think, therefore I am. And that other person was like, you aren't your thoughts. Like your thoughts are separate from you. So I think like whichever school of thought you align with now dictates how you move forth in the world. Because if you think, therefore you are, then you just take all of your thoughts as face value. Like I thought it, therefore I must believe it in some capacity. But if you think that your thoughts have the ability to be almost like hijacked by something, someone, somewhat else, whether it's a chemical, a spirit, an intuition, whatever, then that's a different way of viewing the world as well. So they're all valid. I think they're just like different tools and skill sets.
Yeah, that's so true. That is very true. How would you say you perceive your brain in this reality?
I think that my brain is a tool that I probably don't use enough. This is how I think about my brain, right? Yeah, like I think that, not that I don't use it enough, I just think that I've spent too much of my life using my brain with bad technique. You know how like
when you exercise
with bad technique and before you know it, you've got like a spinal injury. Be like, oh my God, I was exercising. Yeah. I was being healthy. Like, what is that about?
Yeah.
I think I feel that way with my brain. Like I spend a lot of time thinking, but not a lot of time. Like I could spend far more time like trying to interrogate what's a helpful thought, what's an unhelpful thought. Is this information necessary? Do I need to know it? What is the point of this? Sometimes I don't go deep enough into that. I'm just thinking like concepts, ideas, imagination. Haha, fun. I want to do this. Let's do this. Fun. You know, when I could just be like, hold on, sis, slow down. Like I feel like when I think about my mom, she's so good at like calming the ideas down. And I didn't recognize that I could be really like feverish with my ideas until I would talk to my mom as an adult and she'd be like, slow down. Okay. Number one, like remember like when I couldn't drive and I was like, I'm going to get a car and I want to get this car and it doesn't even exist yet. So I got to pre-order it. And then she's like, you don't even
that
have
is me.
New car money. You can't even drive. I'm like, yeah, I know, but I can learn how to drive. And she's like, no.
Yeah.
So I almost, like, that's what I'm training in my mind right now. Like, an actual voice of reason that's not discarding what I want, but it's just like, baby, it's not for you right now, okay?
Yeah.
It's okay.
Yeah. It'll like be an for you impatience. Soon.
Yeah, but it's not right now. And I'm like, okay, cool.
yeah. No, I feel the same. I feel like... Yeah, I feel like I need to learn how to use my brain properly, like in a way that benefits me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
instead of just letting it do what it will.
So silly. Anyway, that's an hour. So I know. We did it.
What a fascinating conversation. Thank you for listening. I hope you've all enjoyed. Let's continue this conversation. We have a Facebook group, which have you noticed that the group has improved? Like the posts in there have been quite interesting this week.
They've been so good.
We're so proud of all of you for improving the group. I know it's temporary, but I love this phase that the group is in. So please join and keep it going. Sustain the momentum. Let's keep the good conversations going. Also follow us on Instagram and Twitter and subscribe to our Patreon. And we'll catch you in our next episode. Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.